Mrs. Rep, thank you very much for this interview. You are rapporteur for Ukraine from the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe. You, as far as I know, are going to visit Ukraine next week. What will be your focus?
Next week, it's going to be pre-electoral mission. So we are mostly looking at the political status of Ukraine, what is going on, and how the elections could be as widely representative as possible, considering the circumstances in Ukraine.
Since April, the Parliamentary Assembly has organized lots of debates on Ukraine. At that time, the annexation of Crimea was considered outrageous, and Assembly has sanctioned Russia, and since then the Russian delegation didn't appear, so to say, at the work, didn't work within the commission or however. Also during this this session, we don't have any representative of Russia. My question would be whether in January the Parliamentary Assembly will change its position regarding Russia or not.
As I am a rapporteur on Ukraine, then I can mostly comment on the Ukrainian side. Of course, what has happened since the last decision on suspending the voting rights on Russian delegation, the things have got worse. By today, we have clear evidence that Russian troops have been present, and even more so, apart from the resolutions, we have called the Russian Federation to withdraw any support for the eastern part of what you call them separatists, some call them terrorist insurgents. It is clear that without the very high-level weaponry and heavy weaponry from Russia, the conflict would have never been on that scale. So from Ukrainian side, it's clear that the Russian Federation has been doing much worse, even further, since the annexation of Crimea.
So what will be the next step of the Assembly?
Well, the Assembly has to decide what are the conditions. There is a lot of voices which say the only way out is a dialogue, that there should be a possibility to talk to the Russian Federation.
This is true.
But from the other side, the Russian delegation says that they have been sanctioned without a reason and they never will accept it. So it is very difficult to have a one-way dialogue. What is the way out? There's also a committee of ministers have not found the dialogue possible. There is both sides having a monologue. And what are the interests of Russia today, or what are the interests of Council of Europe? They do not coincide.
There is this subcommittee for the neighborhood policy of Russia. What is the idea behind this initiative?
When we adopted the suspension of voting rights, then a condition on that was to have a wider discussion of Russian Federation and its membership in the Council of Europe. Due to that, the monitoring committee consisted of a very wide-scale committee, and we have had a few meetings. One of them was together with representatives from the Russian delegation and the head of Russian delegation.
They attended the meeting in Vienna.
Mr. Puskov and Mr. Slutsky were in Vienna.
Even though they do not attend the
Parliamentary
Assembly.
Yeah, but they decided to come to that, given a very important committee. And the discussion was, they explained their position, and the rest of people explained their decision. But we did not come to any clear conclusions the way forward.
So was something different in what they explain in Vienna in comparison with what you already knew from the beginning of this conflict?
Well, the debate was very open, I would say. This is a positive side. But the wording from Russians are the same what you can hear from most of the information channels.
Is the Russian neighborhood policy dangerous for Europe? I'm asking you this because I've heard Mrs. Brasseur asking to a question posed by a journalist. The journalist has asked, what is the difference between the neighborhood policy of Russia and neighborhood policy of any other countries? And Mrs. Brasseur has answered, just look at the map. What is the idea?
It is clear if we look at the countries which are in this ad hoc committee, the countries which have had a territorial conflict either with Russia or clear support from Russia. Moldova with the Transnistria, northern the Karabakh issue from support from Armenia, Azerbaijan, but clear support from Armenia. There are still Russian bases in Armenia. If we're looking at Georgia, then Abkhazia, Ossetia is clearly due to the Russian Federation. And now the Ukraine and then Crimea and eastern part of Ukraine. So if we are looking at the in a wider picture, then we can see that the biggest concern is that no country should redraw the borders. If there is an international law on that, then everybody, especially members of Council of Europe, should follow it. And this is the idea of the ad hoc committee, to kind of come to this very sensitive matter in some kind of conclusion. Will we make it until the end of a year? This is a big question.
Mm-hmm. This is your seal. This is your objective, to find a solution until the end of the year?
The resolution gave us a clear mandate. By the end of the year, we have to tell, on the basis of this discussion, what is our proposal to the big assembly, what to do with the Russian...
In January.
Yes.
Perhaps my last question is regarding this issue of human factor here in this conflict between Ukraine and Russia. And I'll cite Mr. Jim Sheridan, rapporteur on the humanitarian situation in Ukraine, who said... over recent months, growing number of cases of missing persons have been reported by all sides of the military conflict in Ukraine. Do we have numbers? How many Russians? How many Ukrainians?
There are three human factors in Ukraine I would name. And first of all, it is the human factor of hate. It is a very growing concern. Most of NGOs working on human rights in Ukraine are worried about it because the hate and the speech of hate is coming from all sides. And if we're talking about the long-term rebuilding and reuniting Ukraine, it is going to be a very important factor. So this is one human factor. The second human factor is, of course, the clear conflict zone. There are people relocated, there are displaced persons, very, very harsh conditions without any possibilities of long-term solution in temporary grounds, in non-heating premises, or having just one room in their relatives. So all of these factors need to be taken into consideration, especially now as the winter is approaching. And the third, what you mentioned, is the very tragic one, is the missing persons, torture cases, misuse of violence, and unfortunately also killings. There are a few organizations who are on a civic level working on it, and they have only basis of case-by-case reports recorded from the separatist areas or eastern part areas, at least 120 people who have been reported either disappeared or most likely being killed. Though these are right now from the separatist or mm-hmm. or
rebels.
Terrorists or rebels or whoever how calls. And there are about 10 to 12 cases of misuse of power from Ukrainian side. But of course, these are only on a civic organizations, people who have applied, asked, and in this kind of conflict area, of course, it's very difficult to have wide-scale statistics so far. And then there is another factor, which is Crimea. And, of course, in Crimea there is increasingly reports, not violence only against Tatars, which is very, very strongly under the pressure of Russian special forces. They special sacred places have been searched, and they feel their family members have been intimidated in the middle of night. but also other activists, civic activists, or anybody who, like the human rights lawyers are telling, anybody who looks too much Ukrainian or too much belonging to any minority. For example, woman of too short hair has been harassed on the street on a claim that she is in Crimea, that she is an LGBT activist. So these are the moments of fear and intimidation which people have reported.
Ms. Reps, thank you very much for this interview.
Thank you.